Well, hey, good morning. I'm glad you're here and happy Easter to you. All month long at Action Church, we've been talking about Jesus as the greatest disruptor who ever lived. Now, if you're in a marketing industry or in business perhaps, or definitely in tech, maybe you've been rolling your eyes a bit because that's a buzzword. I understand that. And also I understand that if you're not in one of those fields, maybe it sounds weird calling Jesus a disruptor. But I will say this, we've all experienced what a disruptor is. A disruptor is simply an innovation or a person or an idea that both creates and destroys. So for example, when the automotive industry took off, it created paved highways and gas stations. Not a lot of gas stations when we had horse and buggies, but it also killed the buggy whip industry, even though I know your uncle lives in Intercourse, Pennsylvania, and has a hipster buggy whip shop. I get that, but as a whole, the automobile actually created many industries and destroyed others, so the automobile is a great disruptor, and honestly, we'll probably experience that again with autonomous cars, or as I call them, self-driving cars, because I'm a redneck. I did see a documentary that's coming out, how Charlize Theron could perhaps take over those driverless cars, and we would only be saved by Vin Diesel. So I don't trust them personally, but it could happen that someday our children or their children would go, I can't believe they let you drive cars, because that will change everything. So the idea is that Jesus came along and not only created this whole new idea of, many would call it religion, but this idea we call Christianity, but he also destroyed other things in his past. We've been talking about that all month, but this is a very special Sunday, and I'm glad you're here because this is when Christians, when people who believe that Jesus was the Christ, all over the world today, in converted nightclubs and real churches and stadiums and back rooms, but all over the world, Christians are sort of celebrating in Easter the origin story of this very powerful, disruptive idea. And in the very first sermon, I just want to read you an excerpt from a guy named Peter who was like an ex-fisherman who hung out with Jesus, and then after the resurrection of Jesus, stood up in a crowded room and began to preach, and his main point was this. He said, God raised Jesus from the dead, and we are all witnesses of this. Now he is exalted to the place of highest honor in heaven at God's right hand. And the Father, as he promised, gave him the Holy Spirit to pour out on us, just as you hear today. So the very first sermon, the very origin of this thing that we're doing this morning, this idea that we're celebrating this morning, was not that, hey, Jesus was a great teacher, or hey, you should live well. It wasn't anything about the Bible. He never mentioned church. He never mentioned charity. He never mentioned anything other than Jesus is alive and we have seen him, and that changes everything. But I totally understand. Even though you are some of the people that would come out on a Sunday morning and celebrate this fact, or at least join in with us as we celebrate this fact if you're unsure, I understand that maybe and probably you didn't like drive here this morning going, woo, resurrection changed everything, because it doesn't necessarily feel that way. And here's the truth about disruptors. Disruptors are sort of like all around us, these ideas that change everything. And here, over the last couple of weeks, I've been using the example of Netflix. Like, Netflix has changed everything in our world, basically. Like, the way we view television, the way we think of watching a series. Even new podcasts come out now in binge form, right? They release all of them because we're used to like watching something or listening to something one after another. We have changed what we think about content. We've changed the way they make movies and they make content. It's changed Hollywood, but we don't think about that. In fact, this whole idea started, I was sitting there on the couch one day with my 13-year-old 6-year-old daughter, and we were watching Netflix. We were actually binge-watching The Office on Netflix, and it was the one where Michael Scott was getting DVDs delivered from Netflix. So it was just like a story within a story within a story, and I had to stop and go, you know, they used to do that. They used to actually deliver Netflix and all. And she said, well, that's stupid. But that's, so I understand that like all of these just amazing things that change everything can be all around us. And we will totally sort of miss that. And here's the thing. I just want to remind you this morning, like of some things that have changed because of Netflix in case you haven't noticed, because it's easy to do. And I also will realize I don't think this sermon series is going the way I'd hoped it would, because I've had several of you stop me afterwards and go, thanks, man. Thanks to your sermon, I'm really starting to appreciate streaming video. And I'm like, that was not the main point, but I'm glad that you're getting something out of it. Thank you. I know you're being smart. I know you. But anyway, here's some things. If it weren't for Netflix, you'd be watching more commercials, right? Like, isn't it weird that now we just, whenever like a scene changes in a show, I don't expect there to be commercials there. I was watching something on DVR the other day, and it like went into a commercial, and you're like, no, it's supposed to just flash forward to the next scene. I should not have to. But we don't realize like how many commercials we don't have to watch, and that's a very good thing. I like one commercial right now because I watch a lot of Velocity TV. I like the one where Kevin Harvick says, why aren't you 3 inches tall? That's my favorite commercial. You wouldn't know. But anyway, but the rest of the commercials tend to be about diarrhea medicine. So like you would be watching, and I work diarrhea into Easter Sunday, but you would be, not literally, but like you would be watching a lot more commercials if it wasn't. And here's another thing that you don't even think about, but I've done a scientific study, 81% of all television shows would start with the word Chicago if it weren't for Netflix. I mean, it'd be like, I know there's like Chicago Medical, Chicago Fire, Chicago Justice, Chicago like Veterinary Hospital, Chicago No Kill Shelter, which is like, actually, that would be adorable. I should write for TV, like a shelter with puppies and kitties in Chicago. That would be awesome. But other than that, like most shows would start with Chicago, and then the rest of them would all be NCISs. But thanks to Netflix, there's actually more things. In fact, I've got like 1,000 things in my queue right now, like I want to watch, and I don't have time for it, which brings me to my final point about Netflix, and then I'll shut up. This is not actually a paid commercial for them. We would be entering into the summer rerun season. Do you remember that? Like when you would go, okay, it's May, there'll be nothing new on until the end of September. Can't even imagine that now because there's new stuff coming. So anyway, what I want you to remember is not how great Netflix is. So if you walk away with that, I have failed. But I want you to understand that something can completely change your world and has changed our world in the last less than 10 years. But even so, we just sort of don't notice. It's easy to sort of just take that for granted. It's easy to just let those things go by. So I thought I would remind you of a few things that we can thank the resurrection for, I believe, and you've probably not thought of them. In fact, you don't. Here's the great thing about these things. These things, you don't even have to be a believer in Jesus. You don't have to believe he existed, really. But you don't have to believe that he was the Christ. You don't have to believe that he died and was buried and then rose again. And you can still sort of like, you can enjoy Netflix without knowing anything about how it started. Does anyone know how Netflix started? I do. It started, one more Netflix fact, I promise, but like it started, or at least the story that Reed Hastings would tell is that he got a $40 late fee on Apollo 13, and he thought, this isn't right, and he started Netflix to change that, and that's why they started renting videos. Now, that story is a lie, and I'm going to tell you why I know that later. But you don't have to know that. You can still enjoy all the benefits. And here's the thing I want you to know this morning. Like, you don't have to know anything about the resurrection. You don't have to believe in the resurrection. And I still believe you have benefited. And I want to share three quick sort of things that, in America at least, we can be thankful for because of Jesus, because of the great disruptor. And the first one is taken from Luke 22, and I'm going to read it, and it's up on the screen. Now, this happened in what Christians call the Last Supper or the final meal. Jesus is meeting with his closest friends, his disciples, in a room celebrating the Jewish holiday of Passover. And he's basically telling them, this is our last time we're going to get together before I am crucified. And notice what they did because they were humans like us. It says, then they begin to argue among themselves about who would be the greatest among them. They're like, hey, I understand you say you're going to die. Let me ask you this. Who's in charge when you're dead? That's basically what's going on here because they were jerks like us. And so Jesus told them, in this world, the kings and the great men, they lord it over their people. Yet they are called the friends of the people. I mean, we experience that, right? Like public servants that gain power and leverage it over us. But Jesus said this. He said, but among you, it will be different. Those who are the greatest among you should take the lowest rank, and the leader should be like a servant. And we see from other scriptures that Jesus is actually not just telling them this, he's showing them this, because one thing that they would do is servants would come in when you came to a dinner like that, and it sounds weird to us, and it's turned sort of vaguely religious in some of our minds because we grew up in different churches that did this, but they would wash the feet of the people who came there. And the reason why is because they'd been walking on these dusty roads with bare feet or with sandals, and they sat down on the floor, and so it would actually clean their feet before they ate. And that was like the thing that the servant did, probably the lowest servant, and Jesus was actually washing their feet as he did, just showing like, if you want to lead, you will be the servant of all. And he said, who is more important, the one who sits at the table or the one who serves? The one who sits at the table, of course, but not here, for I am among you as one who serves. So Jesus flipped this whole idea of leadership on its head, and from that came this idea of servant leadership. And if you're here this morning and you're sort of enjoyed your experience, I hope you did, maybe not all of you, but if you've enjoyed your experience, like you walked in and you didn't get accosted and you got a free donut and people were sort of friendly and the lights were on and we had great music, all of those things happen because as followers of Jesus, our leaders here at Action Church lead from a position not as they have a title, so they're in charge, but they actually have an area that they serve. So this whole thing is an example of servant leadership. Like the greater you are in our organization, it's the more you do for others. And that works every time it's tried. And it's not just here at church, but all over the world, thanks to this idea Jesus started. And they had never experienced this before. Certainly not the way the Roman Empire worked. Certainly not the way that the Jewish temple economy worked. But Jesus said, no, no, no. If you leverage your power to serve others, you can actually become great without sort of lording it over them and going, hey, I'm in charge. It's just an amazing concept. And we can thank Jesus for this idea. And the reason why I say that is because everywhere that there are concentrations of Christ followers, of people who follow Jesus, you find this idea of servant leadership, of leading by serving others. And it happens in the workplace. It happened, and it's become this movement that's just amazing. And we can thank the resurrection for that. Here's another one. Now, that's if you enjoy church. You're welcome. If you don't enjoy church at all and you've got your arms crossed, I can't see you, so don't worry. I'm not pointing you out, but like if you've got your arms crossed and you're like, I really, really, really hate Christians and I was lured here by the donuts or someone promised me they'd take me out to eat later or I thought it was still a club, like I'm still out from last night, whatever. Like, you're like, this is the weirdest club I've ever been in. But anyway, like if you hate Christians, this one's for you. So if you like Christians, servant leadership is awesome. Let me read this. This is, ironically, the guy who does this is actually the guy who preached the first sermon that I just read an excerpt. But it says, but even as Jesus said this, so imagine they're walking into this park. They called it the Garden of Gethsemane, this park where Jesus knows he's going to be arrested. But it says, but as even Jesus said this, a crowd approached, led by Judas, one of the 12 disciples. And Judas walked over to Jesus, and he greeted him with a kiss. This is like the sort of the thing that we've thought about so many times, how Jesus is betrayed by one of his followers. And it says, when the other disciples saw what was about to happen, they exclaimed, Lord, should we fight? We brought swords. And one of them struck, not a great fight, but he did fight. He says one of them struck at the high priest's slave, slashing off his right ear. One of them was Peter, actually, the guy who preached the first sermon. But Jesus said, no more of this. And he touched the man's ear, and he healed him. And then Jesus spoke to the leading priests and the captains of the temple guard and the elders who had come for him and said, am I a dangerous revolutionary that you've come with swords and clubs to arrest me? Why didn't you arrest me at the temple? I was there every day. But this is your moment, the time when the power of darkness reigns. And Jesus walked with them peacefully. Not only did he stop his disciples from fighting, he put the guy's ear back on. And so if you don't like Christians this morning, you can be very thankful that Jesus, the power of the resurrection, started this whole nonviolent resistance thing that's carried on for thousands of years, because everywhere you find a concentration of people who are Christians, who believe that Jesus is the Christ, who believe in the resurrection, over and over we find the fact that they do not retaliate, from a Martin Luther King march to bombings that have happened in Egypt in the last few weeks. No one is worried that, oh, Christians are going to come back and Christians are going to plant a bomb, or Christians are going to, because we, thanks to Jesus' example, believe in nonviolent, non-retaliatory resistance, even in the face of anger. So you can make fun of Christians all you want. In fact, go home and just light us up on Facebook and you're not going to get a face full of fists. We actually have a taekwondo class here, but we're learning for sport and for self-defense, but not in case the Baptists get lippy on Facebook. That's not why we're training. Because that's not the way it works, right? You know that, I know that. And so this whole idea is another thing that just we don't think about. Like, we don't think about that one of the largest religions on the planet believe in this idea of nonviolent, and it all stems back to the resurrection, to this idea that we look back and we go, oh, Jesus Christ, the one that we believe is the King, the one we believe is the Son of God, when he was arrested, he went peacefully and didn't allow a fight to break out. And here's another one, and this one I think is so powerful. This is a moment, I'm just giving you a snapshot of this moment. On the cross, on being crucified, being brutally sort of tortured to death in a way that we can't imagine, some of his final words were recorded by his friend John. And it says, standing near the cross were Jesus' mother and his mother's sister Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene, just a group of very important women to Jesus. And when Jesus saw his mother standing there beside the disciple he loved, this is John speaking of himself, kind of being polite and not pointing to himself other than just the disciple he loved, he said to her, dear woman, this is your son, or here's your son. And he said to this disciple, here is your mother. And from then on, this disciple took her into his home. And interestingly enough, John is the only disciple that did not die a violent death. And so from what we know, he cared for Mary, the mother of Jesus, for the rest of her life. And I love this, but it's just amazing when you think about, like, this was in a time when in the Roman Empire and in the Jewish settlement that they were in, women were considered slightly above property, and nothing was less valuable than a widow, a woman who had already raised her children, her husband was dead, and so she had sort of no means of providing and no real attachment and no real value in that society. And so it was unthinkable, quite frankly, that Jesus' concern would be for his mother. We believe Joseph was already dead. And so one of the last things we see is Jesus making arrangements for his mother, even though he's the one being tortured to death on the cross. And from that, and we see also during Jesus' life, we see the fact that he valued children. And it's weird because we can't even imagine this, because in America, we think, oh my God, there's nothing more valuable than our children. We do anything for our children. We value women. We value children, even though you might go, well, not enough. But just that idea would have been so foreign at the time that Jesus sort of did these things. And so everywhere you go, that there is just a concentration of Christ followers, of people who go, Jesus is the Son of God, and we put our trust in him, you will find a way higher than average value for women and a value for children. And in fact, the early church, we're going to talk about sort of the next step of this story next week about how the church started. And one of the things the church did that was so strange and so countercultural at the time is taking in widows and orphans, because it was a culture where if you had too, we can't even imagine this, but you had too many boys or you had too many girls or, hey, we don't want another kid, they would just sort of set their child out in the dump basically and abandon their children. Or when a widow, you know, when a husband died, well, the widow was not valued or taken care of. And Christian people at that time, the church was famous for valuing these people that society just didn't value. And everywhere there's a concentration of Christians on this planet, you will find a society that values women and children. But here's the thing. All of those things, all of those benefits, all of those three things, and you might be skeptical, and I understand that, but you just kind of trace back and go, wherever those followers, even if they were wrong about Jesus, they believed that. You can experience the benefits of them without believing in Jesus or believing the resurrection actually happened, and I fully understand that. Just like you can sort of not know anything about how Netflix started, not care how it started, want me to shut up about Netflix, but still go home and push play and just binge watch for the rest of the afternoon, or be able to see new content that you never would have been seeing if it wasn't for Netflix. But that's just a benefit that we can all get. And so I was thinking about this, like, as I come and tell you, like, here's why I think it's so important that we know that this whole thing started because Jesus died, and not just died and then happened to come back. He called his shot for years. It's amazing to me. The two things that sort of amaze me about the resurrection is how surprised everyone was, and I get that because we're humans, and even when someone tells us something, we probably don't necessarily believe it if it's outlandish. But again and again and again, I find Jesus saying, hey, I'm going to die and I'm going to come back. You can count on that. So why would it matter that Netflix was not started, actually, because Reed Hastings had a $40 late fee on Apollo 13. He told that story hundreds, maybe thousands of times. That was the pitch back in the 90s when Netflix was starting up. His pitch was always that, one time I got a late fee and I thought, man, this isn't right. There's got to be a better way. And that's how the whole thing. So here's an interesting thing. He had a partner named Mark Rudolph, and Mark Rudolph was sort of pushed out of the country as a company and is no longer part of Netflix. And as you can imagine, he was willing to tell all years later. And what Mark said is that story never happened. In fact, he said the only reason they started Netflix, and this makes sense when you think about it, is because, in his words, they saw Amazon making truckloads of money and we wanted some of that. That is what the story is. And actually, the reason why they went into the DVD rental business is because they were thinking, what could we ship? Like, books seem really heavy. And so Amazon's spending a lot on shipping, and they realized, because DVDs were fairly new in that time in the 90s, that you could take, their big innovation actually was you could take a DVD out of its package and put it in an envelope, and they mailed hundreds of them back to their house to see how many would survive. And they realized, like, this media is really tough and really light, and so we could make a fortune renting and selling DVDs. And that's the real story of Netflix. Now, here's the thing. That matters not at all if you're a consumer. Like, if you're just watching Netflix, it really doesn't matter, right? That could become important if what? You were an employee. Like, you would want to know sort of like, what's the main thing around here? Definitely if you're an investor. In fact, I was thinking, like, that makes so much sense because over the years people have said, I thought Netflix was about DVD and they went to more to streaming, or how come Netflix seems to be in the entertainment business with new content? Like, and the reason why is because when you understand, like, it's always been, and there's nothing wrong with this, but it's just always been about let's make truckloads of money like Amazon. It was never about one certain thing. And so the only thing that matters, like knowing the origin story and knowing like why they came to be, would be not if you're just a consumer, but if you're an investor, definitely an employee. Netflix is worth about $41.6 billion right now. They have 3,700 employees, and I would say that being part of that could be really important, could change your life. And so I just want you to think about this. Knowing that, I want to give you one more story of Jesus, just kind of in wrapping this up. And this is not a story that matters if you are sort of a consumer of Christian benefits. If you're sort of just, and it's just fine, if you're here this morning and you go, well, I dig the fact that Christians won't beat me up if I make fun of them. Got to be able to make fun of someone. It seems pretty touchy right now, so that's good. Or I like the way they treat women. Or, hey, I don't like Christians, but I wouldn't mind if my daughter married one. Like, all of those benefits you can experience whether or not you believe any of the background story. But if you were to invest not your money, but your life in this idea that Jesus actually rose from the dead, it would be very important whether or not it was true. And so I want to read you one more story. And this is an interesting story because this is about another resurrection. But Jesus says something, and I did say another resurrection. We always think, well, the only person who ever came back was Jesus. No. Jesus' best friend came back almost a year ahead of time, and I want to read this story to you, or at least part of it. It's taken from John 11. So when Jesus arrived at Bethany, he was told that Lazarus, his friend, had already been in the grave for 4 days. And Bethany was only a few miles down the road from Jerusalem. And many of the people had come to console Mary and Martha. These are two friends of his who are also friends of, or sisters to his best friend. And when Martha got word that Jesus was coming, she came out to meet him. But Mary stayed in the house. And Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if only you had been here, my brother would not have died. Like, she'd seen him heal people. Like, why didn't you heal him? You healed everyone else. You didn't heal your best friend. But even now, I know that God will give you whatever you ask. And Jesus told her, your brother will rise again. Yes, Martha said. He will rise when everyone else rises at the last day. This is actually not a bad thing to say. This is actually a statement of faith because not everybody believed that there was anything past the grave. So Martha's going, religiously, I agree with you, Jesus. I believe in this religious idea that, yes, someday there'll be judgment. Someday there's more to this. But Jesus said, no, I'm not talking about that. Jesus said, I am the resurrection and the life. And anyone who believes in me will live, even after dying. And everyone who lives in me and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this, Martha? Yes, Lord, she told him. I've always believed that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, and the one who has come into the world for God. And the next sort of actions that we find in this story is Jesus sort of walking up to this tomb and saying, hey, let's roll this rock back and let's get in here and see my friend Lazarus, because I think he's going to come back out of there and everybody be like, no, he's been in there for 4 days dead. He's going to smell terrible. Let's not do this. And we find Martha not just sort of a consumer anymore, not just a, hey, it's great being Jesus' friend because he heals people, but now completely invested, saying, do whatever he says, because I believe now that he can raise my brother back to life, even though he's been dead for 4 days. And that is exactly what happened. And so, why do I think the resurrection matters? I want to leave you not with even the words of Jesus' followers who said, hey, Jesus is alive and we've seen him. We're staking our life on it. This whole thing is started not because of Jesus' teaching, not because of sort of some scripture that we have, not because of some good ideas, but because we have seen this man who said that even if I die, I will live. We've seen him walking around, but I leave you with the words of Jesus who said, I am the resurrection and the life. And anyone who believes in me will live even after dying. And everyone who lives in me and believes in me will never, ever die. See, I want the band to come back up here. But I want to leave you with this idea. That what Jesus was saying is, if we believe that this is not it, that there's another dimension, another part of life that goes on forever, it would cause us to live differently, to invest our lives in things that would make no sense in the short term, but would make a lot of sense if there's more than this. Yesterday, I did a funeral, and it was sort of sad in one sense. It was a friend of ours, and never was able to have any children. Didn't have a lot of family left. I think there were 7 people at the funeral, 3 cars in the procession. Didn't own a lot of property. In fact, I don't know if she left much of anything after a long stay in a nursing home. And sort of all the markers that we would think about this life, all of the things that we would go, well, that's how you mark a life well lived. They just, quite frankly, weren't there. But as I did the service and I talked about her, I saw just sort of the example of what happens when we invest our lives in the way Jesus talked about. There was someone there who had flown in from many states away. And it wasn't a relative even, it was just someone she had babysitted. Even though she couldn't have children, she babysat and poured her life into other kids. And as I stood there and I was sharing with them, I said, you know, of all the things she's invested in life, like not a lot here, but because of this resurrection idea, because of what Jesus said, I am the resurrection and the life, and those who believe in me will never die, I am certain that this is a life well lived. And I think she's really happy with her investments right now. And so there's a point for all of us. And I don't want to end this. This is not just about dying. This is about the way we live and what is going to matter. And I just couldn't leave here today without inviting you to just consider this one question. Which is, of all of the years that this has gone on, of all the witnesses, the hundreds of witnesses who said, this guy Jesus, he's not dead. We've seen him since. What if that were actually true? And what if this idea of life that ends when we stop breathing is truly nothing like that, that it goes on far after and how we live now affects that forever as Jesus taught? That would change everything. And that's why as Christians we make such a big deal about this holiday. And that's why as Christians we think it's so important to remember that a Jewish guy who lived 2,000 plus years ago, who never had property, who never had family, who didn't have any children of his own, who really lost in every way we would keep score in life, could be the greatest figure in history since and for all eternity. So I'd like to pray with you. Dear Jesus, God, we believe you are alive. And God, as your child, I believe it matters. I believe it matters greatly. And God, I just want to thank you for all the benefits of the resurrection that I experience daily that I totally take for granted. But God, on this day, we just want to say thank you for risking everything, for sending your son Jesus. And we're so thankful for his sacrifice. And God, I pray that there would be people here today who would allow that fact, who would allow that thing that happened to change the way they look at not only the afterlife, but this life here and now. In your name we pray. Amen.